What would you like to? I'm a Trinity graduate, 1985. I went to UConn School of Social Work, majored in community organization and minored in policy practice, and graduated in 1990. And I've lived in New York 30 years, and I was back and forth working in Connecticut and New York for about 18 years. So.
So could you share a little bit about your family, if you feel comfortable? Like where,
yeah,
where
so
you
I
go?
I grew up in the south end of Hartford, in an Italian-American Catholic working class family. My father worked for City Hall for 32 years as a janitor. My mother was graduate from high school, stayed at home to raise us, Amelia and John. And have one brother and sister.
You mentioned like growing up the Irish neighborhood, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Oh, it was an Italian-Irish neighborhood in the south end of Hartford.
And how
not far from Trinity, yeah.
How would you describe your neighborhood, like, if you...
At that point, so I'm 61, I'm 60, I will be 61 in January, and so growing up, it was predominantly white neighborhood. Ethnic groups were predominantly, as I said, Italian, Irish, Polish, and then the neighborhoods slowly changed in terms of diversity, with Puerto Ricans moving into the area, and then finally African Americans. It was very clear when I looked back that there was a lot of redlining and steering people of color from that neighborhood, because the city was very divided along racial lines.
Did you notice any kind of tensions between the people who were already living in your neighborhood and between the newcomers?
I heard some comments that were very racist, but in high school, I went to a high school outside of Hartford. It was a Catholic seminary in Bloomfield, and then when I got accepted to Trinity, I lived on campus for most of 3.5 semesters. So I was exposed to some of the tension, but I wasn't as immersed in that until later.
So, you know, if just like a question, if you remember for sure, like in your neighborhood or, you know, surrounding areas, were there like apartment complexes where renters heavy?
Okay. So there was a mix. We had, hold on for 1 second. My family lived in a single family home, which we had access to through a great uncle who was, you know, owned it. And when he died, my father and family had life use of that. Excuse me. And there were a few apartment buildings on the street. There were 3 family homes. There were a couple of larger apartment buildings on the street growing up, but I didn't really relate with. We had a huge yard in the backyard, so we had pear trees and apple trees, very unusual for Hartford, because we had pear trees, apple trees, people played in the yard. But the comments I heard, I remember one of the neighbors, because my father used to yell at the kids sometimes to get out of the yard because he was afraid they'd break the window of a neighbor's garage and he'd have to pay for that during softball. And I remember the neighbor in the area told him once, if you don't stop yelling, I'm going to move and sell my house to a black family. But that was a threat.
Oh.
It was used as a threat like that. Mm. So that, and I remember, so then it, when I went to Trinity, and in my, well, I'm sorry, I went to St. Augustine Grammar School and then St. Thomas Seminary, but at St. Augustine, there was maybe one African-American student in my class. So it was very white European-based.
I see.
At that time. But my father sold raffle tickets for the church and for the school, and I remember when one of the priests was transferred from St. Augustine to the north end of Hartford,
mm-hmm.
he took us, the family, to the awards night where they picked the winners, and it was a predominantly African-American congregation, St. Justin Church, and the exposure I had was limited to African-Americans, but my father worked in City Hall, and even though he had old ideologies, he still interacted more
mm-hmm.
than most Hartford residents, cross racial lines
mm-hmm.
and ethnic, in terms of, because the workers were diverse.
Yeah.
And the politicians slowly was a more diverse set of politicians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. So, I mean, since, you were mentioning your age, like 60, so probably, I mean, if you can speak to like, so you are born around like 1960?
1963, yeah.
So if you think about 1970s, just right after civil rights, but probably you were like teenager, like.
Exactly. So it didn't register how significant an era it was. That's a good uh-huh. point. So we were in the midst of all of the changes and advances, but that's a good point, because there were, uprisings or mm-hmm. riots in Hartford, and I forgot what year.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it was during that, when I was a child.
You will probably, yeah, right.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of it at all
mm-hmm.
until I went to Trinity, and then I helped my freshman year. I was on the student government, and we created a community outreach program, which still exists, with Joe Barber staffing it and the team. When I worked on it, this woman, Ruth Watson, started it. She was the first chair, and it was a committee of the student government, and then I became the chair my second semester of my first year at Trinity, and we built it to have multiple service opportunities, serving meals to the homeless, work with people with disabilities, with elderly services efforts, tutoring, and trying to help bridge the campus with the community.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that, because, this is so important. What we are doing is like still the continuation of the work you started, like during this time. So, but John, what was it like push you into this kind of, building up the community outreach?
The organizing? Well, at Trinity, as I said, if I went further back,
mm-hmm.
even though I'm no longer part of the church, it was an impetus out of the belief system, and a priest in high school was very progressive, and he was a role model for me, and I got, in terms of social justice issues and critiquing the church and the system, Father Leary was amazing. And then I had that background, and then coming from a poor family and then seeing the we at times had to there were limited funds for groceries, or my father had to get on food stamps a couple of times. I mean, he was a laborer in this, serving City Hall, but mm-hmm. it was a struggle. So I guess I was conscious of that economic struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And then at Trinity, doing the community service work helped. And then I took a semester off my junior year and lived in Berkeley, California. And I went there to come out, really, as a gay man, because I wasn't comfortable in Hartford. And I got politicized in California. And then I saw activism around various LGBT issues. And then when I came back, I was very much an activist on many issues.
Mm-hmm.
And we built alliances and coalitions mm-hmm. on campus. So with the anti-apartheid movement, we had the LGBT issue. That was my impetus. And then, fighting around diversity issues on campus or challenging the fraternities around sexism. We made the linkages to a lot of causes.
Mm-hmm. But you're mentioning like how you didn't, I mean, California, I understand, and San Francisco is being the place probably to go during these times.
Well, I was in Berkeley, California, the next town, but I did visit San Francisco.
I mean, sorry about the
it's because it was also the beginning of the AIDS crisis, so I also had a lot of fears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I would ask. Like, so it wasn't like for you comfortable being here in Hartford. Maybe in the smaller scale, like maybe because also you had your family. If you were kind of like open to that, you are not open to them, or but in general,
I was open to my sister, but not my parent. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in general, Hartford itself also like oppressive.
At the time, it was. I wasn't connected, so I don't even know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And when I returned from California, I met a local activist who's still around, Steve Thornton.
Yay! We are also like scheduling an interview with him too.
Yeah, so because we created a progressive student alliance on campus,
mm-hmm.
I went to a session at what was then Harvard College for Women, which mm-hmm. no longer exists, but they had a session because they were forming a progressive student alliance, and I think University of Hartford had one. And I went to the meeting, and Steve was the speaker,
mm-hmm.
Steve Thornton.
Uh-huh.
And then when I came back to campus, we formed a progressive student alliance,
mm-hmm.
which was an attempt to unite all the progressive groups on campus.
Okay. So I was going through also Steve's bio, and then saw that he started with the housing rights activism kind of thing, and then health workers, maybe if I'm not mistaken.
Well, he worked for 1199, the mm-hmm. union of mm-hmm. health workers. And so what happened was I was still a student. I met him
mm-hmm.
then. After graduation, I mean, there's a lot that happened that senior year at Trinity around activism, which I could tell you about, but it was after I graduated, so in some point between 85 and 87, I met Steve again, and there was a group called Homefront, which he helped start, which actually had a space in the north end of Hartford, and it was a gathering space for progressives. And he could tell you all about that, but out of that group and a subsequent group, People for Change, which he helped start, we had a Hartford-based coalition that started in 1987 to 93. And that coalition was, again, unifying all the progressive groups and neighborhood organizing groups. And we created a issues platform, mm-hmm. so that addressed homelessness, housing, LGBT issues, and Steve invited me and Crispin and other activists and others into that coalition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, do you have any kind of lots of things going on, right? All these different coalitions, and then it's nice that. Because I would also ask about these connections between different groups, and then, yeah. And so what kind of impact this was creating, like bringing different issues together and people, like all these different voices?
Yeah, so on Trinity's campus, we each group, you know, there was a group for African-Americans, the La Voz Latina was a Latin group, there was... We created an anti-apartheid group. We had a committee against homophobia. There was a Eros, which was the queer support group. There was no center back then. And we, you know, so each group had their own activism, but then we came together. And I know one of the unifying issues was trying to get Trinity to divest from corporations that were investing in South Africa. Because that was the cry across the world to bring down the apartheid regime. And each group, we could feel the connection around that issue. And we had a big rally on the quad, and it was a candlelight vigil, and pressured the president. I mean, we didn't divest when I graduated. It didn't happen, but subsequent years it did happen. Mm-hmm. But another activist, Danielle D'Angelo, was very involved in that anti-apartheid effort. So the with bringing people together, obviously, both invigorating but also challenging. Mm-hmm. I could speak more to the People for Change effort because I don't remember all the dynamics at Trinity of bringing people to groups together, but. I will say at Trinity, I didn't work on the first one, but there was an awareness day where they canceled all classes and tried to do a whole immersion around anti-racism, anti-homophobia. We had trainers come in. That happened either my first year or second year, and then we repeated something similar, but it was a week long. Mm-hmm. Awareness Week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think we organized that my senior year, where we brought groups from the community in. We had activities, all different.
How were you like connecting with the people, out of the campus also? Like, I mean, because nowadays we have maybe like easy ways of communication, right? Internet and everything.
Well, okay. With community outreach, I The student activities director, Wayne Asmus, he allowed me to use my work study in the summer to interview agencies in the community that could serve as service site. And then I built a manual, just to with the punch the holes, and then we had a sheet for each agency that was typed. And then, so as I got to know different groups, I built some connections out there. But when I came, okay, that's what happened. So first it was, he allowed me to use work study, and the chaplain, Alan Tull, who was the Trinity chaplain, he let me use the his office. I had keys to the chapel. He was gay himself. He was amazing, but closeted, but he was a great ally to all the progressive groups. So, and he had the coffee machine, and early on the computer he had later. So then we got then he then I was able to use work study, I think, for the year, and that to help with community outreach. And then we pushed for the creation of a job, which I had the year after I grad, 1986, not 85, 86. So we create that happened after I graduated, but we were pushing for institutionalization of the community service, because in the 70s, evidently there had been a very elaborate community outreach program, but it died because students left, and we wanted to institutionalize it. So then, to your question, when we did that awareness week my senior year, I think the struggle I was going through after coming back from California was the limits of community service, and now how do you change systems? So I was going through that internal struggle, like community service wasn't enough. So then we needed to have political organizing.
As the next
And
step.
going to California, I saw what people were doing. And when I came back, I met, as I was more conscious to look for that.
For the
And then
both,
when I
yeah.
graduated, I worked for the Food Share Commission as a VISTA volunteer, which is like the AmeriCorps, federally funded, and it was a food collection agency that gave the food to soup kitchens and programs for the homeless, etc. And then in 1985, I applied to UConn and got in for the next fall semester. But I had gotten involved in the Gay Rights Coalition, Connecticut Coalition for Lesbian and Gay Civil Rights, when I graduated, after I graduated. So, and how did I meet them? I met them while I was going to a gay Catholic group, Dignity. I met this guy Crispin, and I was working at a cafe near Trinity, and he comes in the next week with his boyfriend, and the boyfriend, who was an activist in Hartford for many of these issues, he said, "You two have to meet." And there was a meeting the following week for this statewide Connecticut Coalition for Lesbian and Gay Civil Rights, and then from there, Yeah, then I found a home to do organizing from, and we created a chapter in Hartford.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we created that chapter in Hartford for the Coalition for Lesbian, Gay, Civil Rights,
mm-hmm.
a lot of us were very progressive queers, okay? So that was a lot of lesbians, gays, who got progressive politics. You could have had a different set of people, but the people most vocal at the time were more progressive, gay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we opened the doors for all these people who are now moderates and conservatives. You know what I'm saying? We made it easier for them to come out, and now we changed the culture and shifted it.
Yeah.
And you have a more diversity of political expression, which wasn't happening then. It was the radicals, progressives, and liberals. And so then when we had the Hartford chapter, Steve Thornton then invited us to join People for Change.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of, I know. But it's interesting, the lineage.
Yeah, all these different, you know, connections.
And last point is there was a cafe in the near where Tassane is,
mm-hmm.
next door,
yeah.
to the left.
Uh-huh.
If you look at Tassane, to the left where the Mexican restaurant is,
yeah.
was a lesbian-owned bookstore cafe called The Reader's Speak.
Oh my God!
And that was a hangout for a lot of activists.
What was the name again? Readers?
The Reader's Feast. Very important because it was a central gathering place. Homefront was the group that Steve started that was based out of this building in the North End that I think a nun ran, Sister Judy Beaumont. But in the West End, there was the Reader's Feast, and in the South End, there was Arts and Leisure Cafe, which was on Zion Street, near the bar that's over there.
Mm-hmm.
But the Reader's Feast was a gathering place, and the founders of that, Carolyn Gable and Tolly Miller, are still around.
For the first time, I'm hearing about this. Thank you.
Oh yeah, you're living right near.
Yeah.
You could have hung out there.
Yeah. God. Yeah. I wish it was open, but yeah. So, John, my question is then, you know, we are mentioning all these different groups and connections. I mean, if you can speak to, if you remember, like, I want to also ask some specific questions regarding our topic. If you remember, if you can remember, like, because you mentioned working with homeless people also. So can you speak to any, like, housing struggles or problems people were experiencing?
Yeah. So what happened was, after I was a VISTA volunteer, the next job I had was with the Hartford Neighborhood Housing Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a coalition in Hartford fighting for housing rights against, you know, addressing the blighted housing issue, looking at homelessness. Denise Vieira was the director, and Jerry Main was the on the board. You have to talk to Jerry Main. He's in East Hartford,
mm-hmm.
Maine. And Denise now works, I think she still works for a national housing, Vieira, Vieira.
Okay, yeah.
Jerry might know, Steve might know where she is.
Mm-hmm.
And so Denise was very involved in People for Change also.
Mm.
And Jerry Main was involved in the West End.
Mm-hmm.
So People for Change brought together all the activists.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for these names too, yeah.
What?
Thank you for sharing these names too.
Yeah. So Hartford Neighborhood Housing Coalition, I worked there, I think, a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to remember if I worked there first or the Coalition to End Homelessness, because I worked for the Coalition to End Homelessness as the Membership Services Director. And that group was a coalition of all the shelters and transitional housing programs. So, obviously, it's been, an important issue. We've never had, like, a fight for rent control or rent stabilization there. There's always been a huge homeless issue. I mean, it keeps intensifying. But a very organized collection of programs serving the population. And then, then there was a group that formed later called Save Our Homeless People Association, SOPA. And one of the founders of that is David Martineau. And Marcia Bond, Marcia's deceased, but she was a professor at UConn School of Social Work. She was very involved with People for Change also. But David's still around. He's I think he might be retired. They are on Facebook too. David Martineau is on Facebook. Jerry Main, I guess we have to think of how you could reach the, Steve is connected to Jerry too.
Yeah, we can, yeah, ask Steve.
So Jerry for the Hartford Neighborhood Housing Coalition.
David for...
For Save Our Homeless People Association. I think he was also had been on the board of the Coalition to End Homelessness. And Jane McNichol was one of the directors of Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness. She was my boss.
So,
and she's still a, she's a lawyer advocate at the Capitol. She's still around.
And John, another name I, encountered, if I'm not pronouncing it wrong, Altalesh.
She's deceased.
Alta
was an adjunct at UConn. She taught the grassroots organizing class. She was very involved with the neighborhood-based organizing groups, and there was a very vibrant community-based organization network, neighborhood-based. There was Hartford Areas Rally Together. There was Asylum Hill Organizing Project. There was One Chain in the North End. And there was a shift. And there's people who were there who know how this, how they were squashed by the funders. So if Jennifer Hadlock, who lives in New York, was a major organizer in Hartford. She was there during that period when the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving did some shady things, I think. And the mayor at the time who came out of One Chain, Eddie Perez, she'll have some ideas about what he did during that era. Because when organizer to working at Trinity to becoming mayor, and how did he both what positives and what were the negatives? And he's probably someone you're going to interview because I don't know, he did a lot of organizing in the North End of Hartford.
You are reading this book of Organizing in Hard Times, Louise.
Louise's book.
Louise's book, and so I don't know, maybe It would be also nice.
Have you talked to Louise?
No, not yet. So that's why I'm saying. Do you have any connections to her or?
Oh yeah, she's retired now from UConn. She was a professor at the school. So the School of Social Work has been a very key to organizing in Connecticut.
Yeah.
So many people came out of that program.
Yeah, but it's so valuable, you know, and.
And Louise lives in the West. She lives near where you live, a few blocks from here.
Oh, okay.
So she did retire. I have an extra. I haven't seen her. I didn't go to her retirement party, but I couldn't get up to. But she's someone who's been around. She's written so much on coalition building in Hartford.
Yeah.
Labor organizing.
Mm-hmm.
Labor and neighborhood organizing. Mm-hmm. It's in that book. Mm-hmm. People for Change.
Yeah.
LEAP, Legislative Electoral Action Program, and the Labor Community Alliance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great because it's also difficult to find material, like written material.
But she has a lot of articles.
Yeah.
If you could search her work, she's got independent of that book.
Yeah. Thanks God, you know, like, but, so,
And we wrote one piece together on coalition building that was published in a gay. It was a special issue that focused on gay organizing in the gay community. I have to try to find. Oh, here it is. Gay and lesbian rights organizing.
Wow, that's
community-based strategy. Yolanda Padilla is the editor.
That's great. So since you are holding the book, John. Yeah, and can you
buy this book? No,
can you tell me, like, okay, maybe, you know, like, what are the strategies of bringing people like together and then, you know, sustaining this cohesion among them? And because when I was reading, after some point, like, these groups maybe solve or to keep the motivation. What can you speak about that?
This is the reality that they may be short-lived coalition, but what can you accomplish during that period?
Mm-hmm.
And one friend, John Murphy, he used to always say, everything's an experiment. So even if it doesn't last, we're shifting culture, we're moving the movement forward. So longevity may not be, shouldn't be the goal necessarily, because you're going to get disappointed. And people come to the table with different motivations and interests.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be aware of who's coming to the table for the cause, who's coming to use the coalition to advance other agendas. Many people's political careers started through People for Change, including mine at the time, but I did not win. I ran for office in 1989. Because what People for Change did was, we had a coalition, we created an issues platform, and then the leadership decided we should run People for Office to advance the platform, the issues platform. And the strategy was, because in Hartford, by city charter, there's 9 seats on the council, 3 have to go to a minority party, and it was traditionally the Republicans. So we decided to run 3 candidates in 1987 to challenge the Republicans, because you needed less votes to win those seats.
Mm-hmm.
So we created a third party.
Mm-hmm.
And then, To the surprise of the whole system, we won two of those seats. And one of the activists was Marie Kirkley Bay, who was a neighborhood leader from Asylum Hill Organizing Project. And the one of the founders of People for Change was Ron Crataro, who was the president of Hartford Area's Rally Together that Alta consulted with. And they Alta was not happy with this because you don't want your leaders going into electoral politics. Because at least that was the mentality. You got to keep that line. Because once they go to inside, well, they get sucked into
the system and
so much compromise.
I mean, they maybe will lose their like this radical or advocacy side, and
But I feel there's a middle ground because you need good people on the inside. And our philosophy was, okay, we're going to get you elected, we'll work with you, and we're going to keep the pressure on so you actually deliver on the platform. So when Marie and Eugenio Caro got elected, Eugenio came out of the very progressive Puerto Rican activist community. And so we would meet with them, and we still had a steering committee, like the Democratic Party has a town committee. We had our steering committee, and we did all different efforts to try to get input from the community, what were priority issues. But to be honest, there wasn't enough organizing post the election. I always felt, oh my God, we have this database of all these people who voted. How do you keep those people engaged? And that takes money and organizing, unless you're going to, because people have their own jobs, and then doing it volunteer is very difficult. But that's what we did. And then I saw a lot of things during that whole period of how people get sucked into the established system and feel they can make change better within the Democratic Party. So, for example, Marie, after she was on our slate, the next round, they recruited her, the Democrat, to be on the Democratic slate. So then we lost her to that, but the thought was, well, maybe we could have, and she was a vote on certain issues, but the loyalty shifted. So to answer your question, how do you sustain it? I don't know. I would say in the moment, the relationships, the smart organizing, picking the right issues. I think loyalty to some vision and principles. For example, in 87, I tried to run on the ticket and I wasn't selected. But the question to each of us was, if you're not selected, will you still work with us? And I said, absolutely. And part of my strategy in our group was, we'll work for you, but we're going to come to you with the issues we want to pass at the city level. And it worked. We built stronger relationships. Imagine in the 80s you had the LGBT issues were kind of not center stage, so they were they were viewed as, in some groups, as like the issues that divide, abortion and gay rights still. So I was willing to be kind of an educator, organizer. And in if you look at the that group and all the people, some of the strongest heterosexual advocates had gay relatives that made them more open. And I could give you a list of people, So that kind of, it's the personal side of politics and organizing. That's what these, you know, if I took, I could write the personal side of that book because it's those personal relations that sustained it too, or motivated people to fight harder. Or I remember a Puerto Rican, actually he was Mexican, activist, labor activist, Danny Perez, very close with Steve. And before Steve worked for 1199, he worked for a different union. Anyway, so Danny was very involved with People for Change too. And he said to me once, when I started in this, with this coalition, I was very homophobic. And then working together, he said, now, when they criticize you, me, I tell them I'm gay. But he wasn't gay.
He became that strong.
What?
He became that supportive, I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying, those personal relationships. Now, it could go different ways if you don't have a guiding platform. Because you could have the personal relationship that Marie had with the Democratic town chair that allowed her to leave People for Change. Somehow that woman, who was part of People for Change herself before Mary Phil Guinan, she lured her over to the Democratic Party. And now, look at, you gotta look at it in different ways. Here was a black woman, she's been a leader in the community. We are a third party pushing the system, and then the system says, we want you to be part of this, and you know, the established party. So in one way, wow, this is an advancement because it diversified the slate, got more women of color on the Democratic ticket too. I just wish on some issues that it was more, like their allegiance was more solid to this vision, the platform we created.
So everything you are sharing, from one perspective, they can be read as like, you know, success stories.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Many successes.
And yeah, I would maybe ask like as a more specific or vivid example, if you can remember like a memory of something, you know, pushing hard and then saying, okay, you won it. Like, can you?
Well, first it was winning those two seats in 1987. We had 400 people out on election day working all over. Being in that room when that victory happened was an amazing feeling. Because we got two community-based people elected and we beat the Republicans. That was amazing. Then when they got elected and we then it was getting the platform expanded to include more LGBT issues. Then in subsequent elections, I ran as an openly gay candidate, so we broke that barrier. We got more women of color elected to city council. We pushed to get more Puerto Ricans elected because they used to have one Puerto Rican slot, and then we got it expanded to two, and then there were three, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Two on the Democratic slate, one on our slate, two African Americans on the, it became more representative, the
mm-hmm.
council.
Mm-hmm.
Then we passed needle exchange, which was a prevention tool. Louise Simmons was on the city council. It was during that tenure we passed, we created a lesbian, gay, bisexual commission, a city commission,
mm-hmm.
Like the commission on parks, the commission on the, we have a commission in Hartford
mm-hmm.
that would advise on policy. That was passed. We passed domestic partnership before marriage was even thought of. It was an alternative for heterosexual and gay couples
mm-hmm.
where you had the city recognize the marriage. So, for example, if you were a city worker, you could then get health benefits for your partner.
Wow.
We passed a resolution to divest Hartford funds from businesses doing, corporations doing business. No, let me see. There was a fight to get pension funds to divest.
Mm-hmm.
Louise knows more about this because she worked hard on this. And then, let me think, because she chaired the, in 1991, when she got elected, she chaired the health committee.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to move items through there. That year, we, the mayor,
mm-hmm.
Kerry Sacks-Perry, who was elected first in 88, I think, and then again in, no, 89. I forgot when her tenure started, but
mm-hmm.
she got reelected, and we coalesced with her to win all 9 seats on the council.
Mm-hmm.
And the mayor's seat. So we had 3 people for change. 6 Democrats, I have a little call. 6 Democrats and the mayor in 91.
Mm-hmm.
And then the coalition fell apart. 6 months into it.
Mm.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah, that's what I would ask. Like, if you can speak to
I've heard different sides of this.
Mm-hmm.
Puerto Rican activists felt and elected officials in Hartford felt they were not getting their fair share of appointments to high level positions from Carrie Perry's side. She was African-American.
Mm-hmm.
She did, against other pressures, demand that there be 2 seats for Puerto Rican representation on the council. She also pushed for Edwin Vargas to become the Democratic chair of the party, first Puerto Rican. But, who gets to pick the city manager, the fire chief, police chief?
Yeah.
Those are very high level. The corporation council, those were the seats that were fought after. Because they control a lot of the distribution of resources and contract.
Yeah.
So, 6 months in, the coalition broke apart on the council. And so there was a 5-person coalition against the mayor and her allies.
I see. Thank you for sharing these. And I don't want to take your much time. Maybe last, few questions. If you are okay with this, how are you doing, July? We can stop if you are not feeling good with the cough and everything.
Well, I'm willing to talk again. I don't know what's going on. Too much talking.
Yeah, sorry. Maybe we can just,
But what is the other question?
So I would just ask, any direct action related maybe, protests or kind of things, if you can remember. But maybe we can...
Many.
Okay.
Let's pick up there.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I want you to...
I'm sorry, I don't know
what... No. Me, sorry, okay, I'm just... Yeah, thank you for your time, and I'm gonna...
No, and tell me... what's the extent of the study? How many people are you interviewing, etc.?
So actually, we have a long list. We are getting the names and everything, and we are currently reaching out people. But we will target 12 people or so if we can reach out. But people are not living, unfortunately, passed away or so.
Say what?
Some of them passed away, it is not like we can reach out to everybody. But
who are some of the names?
So Wendy Pawlak, the historian person.
Who?
Do you know her? Wendy Pawlak, if I'm...
No.
So she's not an activist, but a historian in Hartford. So we are trying to reach out to her. And Steve, for sure, Louis Simmons. I have her phone number, but I'm not sure, should I directly contact her?
Yeah.
So, okay, good. And Jim Bocher, do you know him?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And Rafi Podolsky, maybe, I don't
know.
Yeah. Luke Melanakos, and we reach out to Pastor A.G. Johnson, but he hasn't yet responded to us. I'm not sure, maybe he's so busy or... So
Rafi was involved in all of these. Louise will know some other people. On the tenant organizing side, there were very active associations in some of the housing projects.
Mm-hmm.
I remember as a candidate going to speak to some groups, but I don't know the... On the tenant organizing side, I don't... Oh, wait a minute. One of the chairs of People for Change came out of one of the projects. Oh my God. Steve will know. Sharon something. I forgot her last name. Hold on.
Yeah, I guess. Steve. Thank you.
Jerry was also involved in CREN, Citizens Research Education Network, which doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for sharing.
But they did various reports about Hartford and all these issues. David Desiderato was the director at one point.
Okay.
And he's around.
Okay. Hopefully we will be able to find them, connect with them.
Yeah, if you send me some of the names, I could see if I have the contact.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Yeah, and thank you for your time and everything. And I want you to stay healthy, so...
I know, I gotta have a lozenge. No, it started or 2 days ago, I don't know.
Oh, maybe someone allergy, But thank you, John. Yeah, I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
And pronounce your name one more time.
Özlem.
Özlem. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a great
All
night.
Right. We will talk.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye bye.
Sorry.
You're fine.
Bye-bye.
Please. And this was Özlem Atalay. I'm the interviewer. I'm located in Hartford. We just talked with John Bonelli, who was located in New York, about his experiences in organizing in Hartford during 80s, 90s. And today was October 26, 2023.